Now, first we talked about those lies. We talked about the admiral, which I understand. You might feel like that more than a day, you know, but there's no real good direction than that, which is the hour. I'm going to tell you, but first of all, I'm looking, I don't see, he said he's coming in, whether it does or doesn't. I want you to convey to Don my apologies for the episode of the last hour. If you knew how much of a hobby he was having the cell phone on is to me, then you'd understand how mortified I was. I learned a couple of lessons. Number one, there's a great deal of empathy in dealing with others who thoughtlessly leave their cell phones on when somebody's speaking or in emergency services. And second, do not leave a house without calling your wife. Then I wasn't necessarily trying to broadcast my Georgia loyalties without doing that, but it worked out in the end. So I just want you to know I'm very sorry about that for disrupting the session as I ran out, literally, the last session. But we'll come back from Lakeland, Missouri, and last week, and on the interminable distance to Texas, we had a dog with us, and the dog water dish and my phone dropped down into that water, thanks to one of my sons, and now the buttons don't work. So, you have to hit that silent button you're thinking? I couldn't. I don't know. It might have exploded in your hand. I don't know. Nothing works like it did. I have been looking forward to this session because of the topic that was assigned. I appreciate the one that was assigned to yesterday. I had benefited so much from the others that I have heard. And even though every time I tell anybody about what I'm speaking about in this hour, they laugh and, you know, that all the jokes are what the normal preacher and how you define that, I believe it's very important. I was at Fort University when Brother Linda Winter was the head of the Bible department, the good Texas preacher, a man of great influence, one of the finest preachers I ever heard. I don't know that I ever heard anybody of greater ability than Brother Winter. And while I feel like I could have gotten more textual instruction at a school of preaching, and obviously I believe in schools of preaching, I would not have paid anything for those years to hear Brother Winkler and the practical material that he gave us. And if you ever heard Brother Winkler at all, he had his own little vocabulary. He used words like figuration that nobody could tell, but he had zeal and enthusiasm. And if you're talking about denominational doctrine, he would lay that down and he'd say, now that's unbelievable. And you'll hear other guys who obviously have been around here. He had those things. He thought it was very important to have the lead statement on a sermon. And so his most famous one was, let us observe. So you think of Brother Winkler. But if you were a student in any of his classes, or if you ever got to hear him speak when he was in a classroom type setting, then you would hear him say, boy, and you might be 80 years old, you're born, be normal. That stuck with me. I'm a preacher's son, and so I believe my dad did a very good job of that, but it never was an all of the emphasis. Something he verbalized, it was something that he did, and I appreciate that Brother Winter verbalized that. Now, in introducing this morning, even though we have eight things that I want to emphasize, one to do or another, I feel like it's important for us to do some defining, because normal can be a relative term. It's just like balance. That's a relative term. People think that balance may mean avoiding certain subjects or always being positive, whatever. That's not balance. Balance is Acts 28:27. Not saying to declare the whole counsel of God. That means sometimes you have to take those names, but you don't want to take them. Marriage is religion and marriage, instrumental music. That's part of balance. As is grace and love, and obedience and so forth. Well, normal is one of those terms that leads from further defining. In fact, if I didn't have to talk to this normal, it's never really been defined in what I believe to be as a normal Christian. But normal is not compromised. It is not a compromise with regard to our subject matter. That's what we're talking about with regard to balance. That's conformity. That's not what we're talking about. And more importantly, as this deals with our lifestyle as preachers, normal does not mean in our dress, in our form of entertaining ourselves, or in any other activity that we do that which is going to hurt our influence, or is going to minimize what our effectiveness is going to be as a preacher. In other words, normal is never a license to sin. I say that for this reason. I have gotten involved in the world of Facebook like about another 2,000 or 3,000 preachers have done. And I think that's a good thing. I think the great way to stay in touch, Wayne and I were so correspondent with that last night. But I think some preachers' pages, and they're making perhaps their activity normal, if they're left of their congregation, they are accepting some things and showing themselves in some ways that is not normal, it's sinful. We're not talking about that. But also, with regard to what we have to do as preachers, we're going to find ourselves at times perceived by the world in a way that anything but normal. And we still got to do that. What about Paul before Festus? What is his perception of Paul in Acts chapter 26, verse 24 through 27? He said, Paul, you're what? You're mad. You're beside yourself. So Paul said, I'm not mad. I'm speaking for the word of truth and soberness. But sometimes people don't think that we're strange. Doesn't it make you think of what Paul says in that first epistle, in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 4, as he's talking about Christians who are being persecuted for right doing? He says that in that particular format of form, that they think it's strange that you do not run with the same excess of riot with them speaking evil of you. What does Peter say in 1 Peter 2, verse 11? They are what? What are the people, how are they perceived? How does Peter perceive them? They're strangers and pilgrims on this earth. So there are going to be times when we're not perceived as being normal by the world. So what do we mean by this idea of being normal? Well, I'll give you a couple of passages that are relevant to us. The first one, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19 through 22, we're very familiar with what that text says. But in essence, Paul says, when I'm among the Jews, I am as a Jew, as I'm among those without law, being outlaw, not without law, but not being under law of Christ. I thought to be all things to all men, that by all means I might save some. And I will find out what I mean by that as we get into the lesson this morning. What about Matthew chapter 5, verse 15 through 16? We are light and salt in this world. Jesus in John chapter 12 says, if I live enough, I'll draw all men unto me. And as we lift up Jesus Christ, we should be attracted, we should draw men to Jesus. And an important way in which we can do that is just what Wayne said in introducing this subject. It is in connecting with people and being in the sense that we can be normal. Now, from the time that we have, what does that mean? As I think to say, I chose the right marker and I lost it. Now here it is. Number one, a normal creature is genuine. Now, in the past, they call this communicator credibility. And it speaks to a character, it speaks to confidence. And John Warren Osgood describes the genuineness of a preacher in this way. He means what he says when he's in the pulpit, and he practices what he preaches when he's out of it. Now, if you notice the word there, in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 16, it's like two words. What does 1 Timothy 4, verse 16 say? Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. What's the order there? There needs to be accuracy in my message, but what about the integrity of the man? You see, before I'm ever going to be effective when I'm in the pulpit, I have got to be the right kind of person that people interact with, and I'm going to be harping on that throughout this particular lesson today. What does it mean to be genuine? Let me give you some sub-points of that. Number one, be the same person. Be the same person no matter who you're talking to. You ever know somebody that was one way when it was one person, and then another way when it was somebody else? Be careful of this that we're not pandering to certain individuals from the congregation, that we are trying to fit in with those that are wealthy, those that are thin, and those that are popular, and we spend our focus on that, and those who are like-minded. Let me tell you something, it is easier for you to hang out with and you to talk to people who are like you are. But that's only a certain segment of the congregation. There are a lot of people in any given congregation who are not as much like you are. They may be of a different race, they're from a different generation, they're different particulars, but they're not making it natural for you to reach out to them. And so you may find it more pleasurable, and you will, to speak to certain ones in the congregation, but you need to be the same person whoever you're talking to. Give ample attention and active listening to certain groups. The praying and the ordinary. Those that are new Christians. Those that are new members to the congregation, not just those that every congregation wants. You know, the husband and wife with 2.5 kids. But others who don't fit into that particular mold. What about widows? What about the elderly? What about the poor? There's a different ethnic background. Make sure that you spend time and give attention to those. In that, you will be seen by all as being genuine. And that will help. And I have desired to know that it reaches many people as possible. Number two, marry your teaching and your practice. Marry your preaching and your practice. This is what Scott was talking about when he was defining the preacher and his practice. But the truest note and the caution of our effectiveness is hypocrisy. Let me share a story with you. A man who is very thankful today is a member of the Lord's Church. Was celebrated in the mid-1960s. By all appearances, this man was getting ready to obey the gospel. Well, as he was going to the post office one day, he looked across the street and the local preacher, who was not involved in Bible study, was coming out of a strip joint. 2 weeks later, this young man was going into the post office and looked across the street, the same preacher coming out of the same strip joint. He said, "Fine, I thought I'd say something about this." And so he walked up to that particular preacher and said, "Hey, I didn't know you guys were out to do that sort of thing." Listen to that. He said, "I'm preaching on sin, and I felt like I needed to do some research on the subject." He didn't convince that man. I talked with him. And he said, "You know, if I had died in those 30-some-odd years between the time I studied and the time I became a Christian, I would have lost him in my thoughts. But I allow that preacher to be my stumbling block for all of that time. His influence. When you're in a restaurant, when you're at Walmart, when you're in the community, and you don't think that there are people who are watching you, they're watching you. And how you behave yourself is going to either draw them to Christ or draw them away from Christ. That's being known. Making sure that we marry what we're saying with how we're living." So 1 Peter 2:1 says that we're to put away, among other things, hypocrisy. What do you think about with regard to modesty and entertainment? Well, what are you doing in those regards? What do you think with regard to being involved in the work of the church or evangelism? This church needs to be a family church. Well, how are you doing in that regard? We always need to be striving to put those two things together, what we say and what we do. Baxter says it's a probable error in those ministries that make such disproportion between their preaching and their living that they will study hard to preach exactly and study little and not at all to live exactly. I suggest to you that's part of being a normal preacher, being genuine, but also number three, develop a genuine love and affection for your hearers. We've got to watch this parallel. But there's it, us and we, my family, versus them. This idea that sees problems, that sees undermining and other members behind every corner. We need to strive, even if we've been burned. If you preach all of us, you're going to be burned. You've got to overcome that. And remember that you're trying to connect and have a relationship with the people for whom you preach. Well, you think about the Apostle Paul. There's the guy who was born. This is 2 Timothy chapter 11. Not only by non-Christians, but also by the brethren at times. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. He had to swim alone in his last defense, he said. And sometimes when Paul was preaching, it's certainly true about Paul in Galatia, he had to spend a lot of words in speaking to them strong words of rebuke. And I submit to you that the book of Philippians is not just the epistle of Jared. It was the epistle that was going to be written because they didn't have the gifts that they ought to have because of loneliness and sympathy. There were problems that had to be addressed, they had to be of the same mind. But what does Paul say in the beginning of that prayer? And which we find the key words in that epistle. Philippians chapter 1, 23-8. "I thank my God in all my remembrance of you. All of us are filled with joy in my every prayer for you all." Look over to verse 8. "For God is my witness how I long for you with all the affection of Christ Jesus." Still on that being Jesus. Number 3. Avoid preacher errors and mannerisms that are unnatural. Be natural in the pulpit. You know, it's so related, I train sometimes, but what we are when we sit behind the podium, it's the case of dignity. We deserve our best. People say we don't get our acts in as much when I'm up here. When we're talking to this, so that's just a part of speaking through the years. But generally, be who you are when you get in the pulpit. Be yourself. Sometimes we're not careful. We want to recognize who we are. When we get behind the magic pulpit and start preaching, do watch that. Be careful. People do not trust flippant, passive, smooth, and aloof preachers. We must avoid pretentiousness, a commander-like persona, or that used car salesman error. When people converse with us, or they sit in our seats and hear us preach and teach, they should leave that circumstance being convinced that we are what they thought we were, and what we pretend ourselves to be. Be genuine. Number two, the more that we can shine, be elevated. Let me tell you, the longer they can preach, you'll find that more occasions occur where people are wanting to put you up on a pedestal. And that can be a temptation, that can be appealing to you. I remember three areas where you need to shine being elevated by others. Number one, some may try to elevate us to a higher position of knowledge or expertise. We had to read the book in the preacher's book entitled By That Name by Jack Myers Sr. Some of you may have that in your library. But Myers says, because the preacher is a specialist, peculiarly trained for this particular job, and has full time available to devote to the job, he should not adopt the air or even feel that he alone knows all that there is to know about the work of the church. Preachers are wise who are humble about what they do and what they do not know. It's interesting that at the beginning of the practical section of Romans chapter 12, in verse 3, Paul says, "For through the grace given to me, I say to every one among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment." Be very careful in this regard. Good faith is said, a man wrapped up in himself takes a mighty small package. I read about the young American girl who was going to the Beethoven Museum in Bonn. And there on the stage they had the piano in which Beethoven had performed some of his greatest works. And so she asked the guard if she could play the piano. And with that request, she gave him a lavish script, and so the guard agreed. And she sat down and she began to tinkle out the opening bars of Moonlight Sonata, finally got off the piano. And as she went past the guard, she said, "I suppose all the great pianists asked to play on that piano." And he shook his head. He said, "Paderewski, the great public pianist, is here a few years ago." He said, "I'm not worthy to touch it." Are we more like the girl? Or are we more like Paderewski? You know, it may be a temptation to show folks how much you know to try to prove it, but you can never win, even if you're out. So showing that idea of being elevated because of your expertise. Remember, let's own that. Some may try to elevate us to a higher position of power and influence. You may have heard about the secretary that received a phone call from a man who began the conversation saying, "I'd like to speak to the head hall at the call." And the secretary said, "Sir?" "Yeah, I'd like to speak to the head hall at the call." So if you're talking about our preacher, you can call him a preacher or a minister or a evangelist, but please don't call him the head hall at the call. "So I'm sorry, I was just trying to speak to somebody about donating $500,000 to your business owner." The other boy got up and said, "Wait a minute, I think I hear the big two now." There are people who want to look at you as the head hall of the cross. You're the guy in Europe, isn't he? You're the one that they really connect to. And so they must cut you up and make you think that you're the most important person living. I don't think they can say that. He thinks you're a very good guy. We're having fuel or even fried chicken, and we're going to move on. None of that is very comfortable. All of that still affects the little kingdom. What can happen when we get passed up like that is that people don't agree with what the Lord is saying, so they try to set us aside and they try to flatter us by talking about the influence that we have. Don't be used by people in that way. Also, some may try to elevate us to a higher position of moral authority. This is detrimental in several ways. And John has done a great job of talking about that this week. But when we preach, women may idealize us and think that we are far more than we really are. And that can cause us to stumble and cause those new preachers to do that. Other families may think that we have the perfect marriage or that our family lives or our children's lives are ideal. not only can we not live up to that, but the pressure of that can really cause us great strain and stress and work against our attempt to be normal. The emphasis of the preacher's home should always be to do right because we are a Christian family, not because we are the preacher's family. I'll say a little bit more about that under something else. I like what God has to say. God wisely devised the human body so that we can neither pat our own back or kick ourselves too easily. Have a proper perspective of yourself and don't let folks elevate you. Number three, the normal preacher set parameters. The boundaries.
Now, the second house we move into in Virginia, we love that house, we love the subdivision, but behind our property there was a fence. And we enjoyed a couple of houses that faced another street, and we had some very effervescent children next door, but they wanted to talk about boundaries. And so our backyard was very set to everybody else in the neighborhood. And so even if we didn't lock our doors, they'd come in and we'd find them in our parents. And we weren't used to that kind of thing. We wouldn't be neighborly, but let's at least know what the name is first, and then we So we decided we needed to do something, and so John and I got the boys to help me rebuild a fence around our property. Tried to be as gracious as we can be, but I know that somebody told me that fences make good neighbors. And that's the same thing that I think. I don't mean to cut ourselves off from folks because I'm going to miss around in just a moment. But there are some boundaries that we need to set in trying to preserve being normal. There needs to be some boundaries regarding family. I'm not going to say a lot about this, but know that church work means a lot of demands on your family, and people will take as much of your time as you would allow them to have. And if you bring the whole world and lose your own family, you've lost it all. That's the full mission field, we've often said. And so from the day you move, your life of work, the decisions that you make, your influence, whether that person is there, whether those boundaries are respected, or whether they're not, take your days off. Keep as many nights open at home as you can in order to have a normal family life so that your children can look back on those days with joy. They'll be much more likely to be teachers and teachers' wives with that kind of an environment at home. Remember, under that also, regarding your personal schedule. Two of the most beneficial things that the minister said to me that has helped me when not to be burned out and stressed out and preaching and only trying to be that normal preacher. It's number one, don't work all three parts of the day. If you are in an industry, you will not be expected to work morning, afternoon, and night. Now, there's going to be times when that's unavoidable, but don't make it your practice. If you've got a Bible study that night, if you've got a meeting that night, take some time off in the morning. And then go over in the afternoon and spend some time with your family. If you constantly do that, remember, your time will be taken if you give it up. But we're going to have a family that's very respectful, and you're going to bear that. Another thing under this that's very important is I learned it, and I was so relieved when I actually started practicing. You don't owe anybody an explanation. And let me tell you what I mean by that. You make the decision to play games with your family that night. They're watching movies together. And a brother runs up and says, hey, you know, I've got some time off tonight, and I'd like to go and visit Brother Christian Stone, so would you like to come with me? It's not anything that's life or death. It's something that can let us, it's a choice we've made. And when you make that choice, what do you do in that situation? Just go down and say, I'm sorry, I know you're going to do this, but I'm going to have to leave you. Don't do that. Here's what you do. So I'm sorry, we have plans tonight. And hey, what plans do you have? Well, some that I can't bear. That's what you're about. So that's that. Now you go across the line. That's not fair. You don't know what you're making. Say, well, I'm sorry for anything that I can do now, but let's schedule it next Tuesday. How does that sound to you? Don't let that happen in your family, or it will keep you from that normalcy that you're pursuing and raising your family, and the congregation will respect that. They will, if you're not agree with that. I want to say just a few things about a couple other things. Regarding the former preacher, remember someday you may be the former preacher. And when somebody is telling you the story about the former preacher, you're only hearing half the story. And half the story is never the whole story. But also regarding people and relationships, we need to be allowed to have normal friendships. We do, our wives do, and our children do. Again, that goes back to we do what we do because we're Christian family.
We don't put extra expectations, nor do we expect the less is thought of us than others. But if our relationships are very careful, then we can never help them without explanation. Now, I'm going to say that to say this. With regard to relationships, there are some that we need to be very careful about. And I wish I could go into more detail. Number one, there are relationships with the minority that cause us to neglect or ignore the majority. Now, you develop those good friendships. Go into the house and spend time together. Let your hair down together. But don't spend all your time with two or three families. I've noticed that with some preachers. But they're like everybody else. I'm kind of shy and I feel more comfortable with folks. And so I spend all my time there. So the last thing we did, after every service where I'm with them. Every time I'm at a social function at church, I'm with them. And then I'm also in their home. Don't do that. Because that will keep you from developing those relationships that you need to across the broad spectrum of the congregation where you serve. There are relationships with confidants that betray our confidence. You know, be very careful about what you say and to whom you say it. You get you into a lot of trouble. There are relationships with those who devalue our values. Those that we make a connection with. We like to hunt, they like to hunt. We like sports, they like sports. But they have some moral issues that they need to be working on and they need to be felt influenced by them. There are relationships with the negative that negate our influence. There are problems and shortcomings in every layer of the world. If you find yourself gravitating to those who are talking about what's wrong in the church, what's wrong in our elders, it's going to affect your outlook. It's going to affect your preaching and the filter that it is going to isolate you from the congregation. It's not healthy. Also, the relationship to the opposite sex that opposes our soul. A lot can be said about that, but one statement that helped me a long time ago, and I use it every counseling session, the pre-marital counseling. Never do anything in remote aspects that you will not do in their presence. That takes a lot. That takes some of what you do on the computer. That takes some of what you do with regard to money. That takes what you do actually in relating to somebody about sex and counseling or other situations. There are also relationships that with friends that supplant or sabotage our family's spiritual and emotional health. Your number one on this earth is your spouse. It is not your good buddy, your friend. And if that friendship begins to interfere with your marriage or with your parenting, then you need to reevaluate that and step back from it. I don't know, how much time do we have?
15 minutes.
All right. I know I'm a slow speaker. I might speed up if that's all right.
Nevertheless, is the normal nature is with the people.
I wanted to go through a chunk of scripture and kind of give you an idea of how Jesus' lives were intertwined with the people's lives. I'm not going to try to do that except just through the outline. I'm not going to develop that, but I want to prove what I'm talking about. Now, before I do that, in the text of Luke chapter 17, 11 through 19 and verse 10, but you can look at the reading of the gospel because you look at Jesus' life and it was all about people. But I want you to take attention to this one. Think back over the last 7 days of your life, your Christian. Think about some of the things in the same place of the last week. Now I'm sure there's some things that come to my mind, and these are probably some of the same things that happened in your last 7 days. I go to the meeting and in the old show and I went across the home with my two boys. I was in a pre-marital counseling session. Same thing about a new marriage. I was in a couple of counseling sessions. I sat on an airplane next to a young woman from Vietnam and talked about various matters. And I was here with you and this particular woman was speaking with me between the sessions. You think about your life. I preached on Sunday, called Bible class. What of all that I said is divorced from the people of it. You think as hard as you can, even though I said walk down the bench of my sermon. Well, what good is a sermon or a Bible class that there's nobody to speak to deliver it? And what good is all this organization except for the people of it? Evangelism is really not the same without human element. You think about perseverance and self-control. Those are only correct to you as a person, but also as you relate to other people, he said. And so our lives are all about people. And we see that in Jesus' life, and I just want to again give you the highlights. Number one, the woman preacher spends time with sick people. You know what? There's a thing in Luke 17, 11 through 19. The 10 lepers that are healed, and only one comes back and says, thank you. There are those who don't pay attention or don't appreciate it, but there are always those that appreciate that you've been with them. The man of faith spends time with young people. That's chapter 18, verse 15 through 17. As it offers in the Gospels, there's illustrations, and then there are teaching sections, and then again, illustrations or accounts in between them. So there's a long section in between where Jesus is teaching, but then people bring their babies to Jesus, and Jesus was always interested in young people. Preachers, we need to give young people that idea that the preacher's not some strange guy at the top in an ivory tower, but somebody that can relate to them. Spend time. Shake their hands. Spend time in their lives. Let them know that you appreciate them. Invest in their lives. Also, the normal preacher spends time with unrespected people. Luke 18, 18 to 25. That's the rich young ruler. Now we're saying that's a waste of time. But you know, you don't know who's unreceptive or receptive until you spend time with people. And the unreceptive can change. Also, the normal preacher spends time with struggling people. Ask the blind beggar in Luke chapter 18, verse 35 through 43. He's one of the most pitiful, needy people in all the Bible. His Bible says, worse by blind and begging. And yet when people are needy and struggling, they are at the most receptive often. Spend time with them. And the normal preacher spends time with lost people. Luke 19, 1 through 10, which is in Jericho, which is the account of Jesus meeting Zacchaeus. Well, it says he was interested in this short, shady, shivering figure up in the sycamore tree, wasn't it? And so spend time with him. And the greatest time that ever spent in our lives is we spent with people that we need to be with. I often say, if you can get somebody to teach a Bible study and they're converted, they'll never have to ask them to be involved in evangelism again. When that moment comes, that moment of truth, when they know the word of God and they're convicted by power, and they say, I need to order that time. It's a wonderful season. But you've got to be among people in order to do that. If you seclude yourself from folks, you'll never be the influence in evangelism that you need to be. Also, and this deserves an entire lesson all of its own, the normal preacher spends time with the Lord's people. So there's something going on in chapter 17 through 19 in the midst of all of these accounts. And that is that the Lord is focusing on his disciples over and over again. He's teaching them about prayer. He's teaching them about perseverance. He's teaching them about tenderness and impartiality and sympathy about the future. So many different things. And it's such an example to us that we need to spend time with the people of God. Yeah, in reaching the living thing it is. They need our comfort. They need our encouragement. They need us to challenge them by our example and by tender words we speak in which they need guidance with regard to biblical matters. But we need to be there in the trying and difficult times. I want to say more about that, but let me just summarize this point by saying that being normal means having a healthy attitude toward the church. Again, an observation I'm seeing more and more, and I say this to encourage and try to bring about a different result, is that we're churning out a lot of preachers who are wonderful in the pulpit. They're so effective. But they're like a dry dish rag outside the pulpit. And I challenge us to do better in that regard. When we can get some excuses, we can say, well, I'm insecure about myself. Or my personality is, I'm more introverted. We've got to work on that. Because we're not going to be effective with people if we stay introverted. It's going to have to change in some sense. We have to change our personality altogether. So we've got to be normal, be effective with folks. We've got to reach out and make connections. Get outside of our comfort zones. We tell churches to do that. We've got to do that. But also, we have to not be discouraged. And so I'm always going to be depressed out there and reach out to folks. And it wasn't the same, maybe it was talking to the team, it turns out to act your way, or better way of feeling. Sometimes you don't feel good, but you got to do it anyway. Or somebody says, I've been burned. Oh, man. I was involved in the local work, and it just, I was so close to somebody, and they burned me. And so now I'm ready. I believe that preachers who do it right are some of the toughest people in the world. We've got to do it. Because we've got to get past that. Because it's all about the people. And if we are not spending time with people, we're not going to be effective. And so a normal preacher develops relationships with the people. Number 11. So let me just list the last four. I want to spend some time on this one, okay? Because this one is very important, and it's in 5th Thessalonians 12, and I think it's worth our time. So I'm going to make this one number 8, even though it's not on my list.
I really want my moral teacher to develop and maintain hobbies and interests. It will make us interesting, and it will keep us from burning out.
Now, I had no problem finding those. Some teachers, I know one teacher, his hobby was boring. That's not the best thing. Find something. I tried golf early. That didn't work for me. And one of the things you can do that, that's creative stress for me. So I looked at other things, and I was in Virginia, and a lot of times this is how you develop your interest in hobbies. Hopefully you'll have some of those. When, and one of those is sports. I've always loved sports, playing and watching and those kind of things. Running, and a lot of people like that, we need to keep ourselves in good health. That would go a long way in our being normal and taking care of ourselves. But in those interests, a lot of times you'll find your interests are developed in trying to reach out to a non-Christian or bring somebody back. I live in Virginia, and it's in the heart of Civil War history. And recently one of the guys that was the brother in Christ who was very unfaithful, but he loved to relic hunt, if you know what that is. I got me a metal detector, and we went out to people's private property, and we hung all over the place, and we were at the strong friendship. He is a faithful Christian today. We can do that through our interest and reach out to people. And I liked it a lot. Because we moved to Colorado, we take them up hiking, we're going with families, Christians and non-Christians, use it as a tool to connect our life, isn't it? Our life is centered around bringing the life to Jesus and helping to save them home to heaven. And so the things that we do, which other people do, that are legitimate exercise, things in life, to help us to accomplish both of those things. All I said about that. Now the picture next. Put up curtains.
Around his right house. Now, I'm not consistent with myself, like I said earlier.
We need to connect with people. And when something's more, I just want to remind the man. I said that just to make this. Like it or not, you are, as a preacher, in a black house. Now, the difference comes from what you do with that information. You got a room in your hand and sit around you all worried about what people are thinking about what you're doing, what your kids are doing at church services, and how you interact with everybody, what your wife does, what you do. Don't do that, it won't take them long. You'll drive yourself crazy. Here's what I mean by the curtains up. Realize that you're there and develop the ability to not worry about it, to not think about it. It's funny, I've been in business for 3 years, but I know on Sunday mornings, if I had really through, I could look around, I'd catch 3 or 4 people looking at my family and me. Do you have that feeling? Knowing people are watching you? I don't use my kids real safely. If I can handle it without their permission, and I haven't asked them my kids permission, but what about when I get stuck with another kid? Everybody all who knows, it doesn't matter, because our kids got involved in stuff. They will find out what the details are, but even if your kids are out, tell them that was not right, because we're Christians. Not because I know the others are going to find as a preacher, because the preacher shouldn't be doing that. Put the curtains up. Don't worry about the fact that people are watching you. You may be a deliverance and a blessing. And you through your childhood and your parenting can be more attuned to those things. But don't let it worry you. Tie you up or not. It's not worth it. And it's not necessary. Also, I suggest to you that a normal picture is in settlement.
I had a different rule
with my brother-in-law, who's a preacher in Benito, Oklahoma. Because I'm so proud of him. And he was an offensive lineman in high school. If you've ever seen Doug Woodall, he is a mountain steel. He's in great shape. But he would rather be at having nose in the book than to be involved in sport. That's just his temperament and his interest. But he lives right outside of where Oklahoma State plays football. And so what he has done for the years, and he lived before that, Atlanta, Georgia, you know, that's out in the heart of SEC territory, you have to have some information about that kind of thing. Now for me, that's easy. I eat drink and sleep all that, and know it's not the Bible, it's the box stories. But that's not his personality. You know what he does? He has made himself informed about those things. Why? Because that's what a lot of his members are interested in. That's what a lot of non-Christians are interested in. I'm not really all that fired up about politics because I know that some are, but I keep myself informed because that's a lot of interest. It's on the minds of a lot of people. Keep yourself informed with word of this because it will help you in being normal, being all things to all people that by all means you might say something. The one that was the only couple of minutes I have left
on is the normal scripture, Mary's letter.
Because some very otherwise affected and seemingly godly men have made some women that were really disastrous choices. And again, this is not very often, but occasionally it happens. I have seen some ministers' wives that have been resentful, worldly, immature, immoral, not ready to leave and flee, cold, bitter, self-centered. I had to say that because I also know there's a whole lot more women who the preachers are married, and then as a result of that, and that's my case by the way, by the marriage that I made, I have made myself a better preacher, a better husband, and a better father. And we need to understand what role we play in helping our women, our wives, to be those that are more secure and thus more normal in their relationships. There's a lot of pressures and problems that face the preacher's wife. Some years back, a book was devoted entirely to the preacher's wife that had a section that began this way. Being a preacher's wife is the most hazardous and dangerous occupation a woman can have, and only the best adjusted emotionally, those who have had full love and security in childhood and who are thick-skinned, but ever come from the experience emotionally and mentally unstarved. Maybe a bit more dramatic, but not by as much as some of us think. What are some valuable traits of a wife that will help a man succeed in the pursuit of being normal? I can't even elaborate on these. I'm just going to give them to you. Number one, she has a generally positive outlook on life. She doesn't mirror the problems and stick her head in the sand, but she's positive. Number two, she is prepared and complimentary. She knows that he receives plenty of criticism from every corner. She's very careful and selective about what she criticizes about. She doesn't always sin or inappropriate behavior or shortcomings, but she's careful about that. Number three, she is warm and affectionate. She's the kind of woman a man can't let to come home to. Number four, she is normal and self-confident. She is not bound up by insecurities. And again, husbands, we have a lot to be contribute to this. She's not paranoid, reclusive, riddled with envy or bitterness or obnoxiousness. She's capable of carrying on an adult conversation. She's always trying to improve herself and doesn't wring her hands constantly worrying about what others think. She's normal, self-confident, not overconfident. There's a difference. Number five, she wants to be a worker for the Lord. She knows that she's not the church's values that run through when they hire her husband. And she may not be able to teach. She may not be able to organize programs. And there are elevated expectations for her than anybody else in the congregation. But she's in love with the Lord, and she wants to be involved. Number six, she has a natural affection for her children and motherhood. Titus 2, 4, and 5 apply for her too. And then number seven, she has a strong relationship with the Lord. She seeks his kingdom first, and she's spiritually growing and not dying. I can't emphasize enough, men, please see the role that you play in helping your wife to see herself in these ways. An emotional and spiritually healthy wife is your greatest asset in ministry and in home leadership. William Holmes said, the man who neglects his marriage or his work is endangering his work as well as his marriage. Well, that is a part of preaching. I don't know what does. Being normal is attainable. And you know what? It's also liberating. If we're not sitting around all the time worrying about what the brethren think, what the others think, but we are driven by what the Lord thinks, we're going to be successful. Now, there are some of those things that I wish that we could add to this list that you might contribute to this, and I'd love to hear from you. If you want to email me, my email is neal@bearvalleycoc.org. I'd like to hear what you think about what it means to be normal. But with these kinds of thoughts in mind, let's try to live those normal lives and win as many people as possible to the Lord. Thank you for your time.